Members, we'll get the Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee going this morning. This morning we have a couple of bills before us. Before we get into House File 400, which is the LCCMR bill, I know some of you are here for that issue. I anticipate probably just 10 or 15 minutes each on the first two bills, and then we'll spend the rest of the time on LCCMR, and then we will come back tomorrow to continue LCCMR and potentially in tomorrow evening also. There are a list of folks on that are interested in testifying on the LCCMR bill, and if I won't read their names, I guess, right now. But if there are additional folks interested, if we have time today, we'll hear from them. We may not do the full review of the bill right now to allow those testifiers that are interested. So why don't we start? I think we're going to, Representative Paul Anderson, let's do your House File 805. I want to let members know this is just some information about House File 805. It's not a hearing for inclusion or a hearing on the bill. At a later date, if this bill does come back, at that time we'll have a hearing on the bill for, against, and all the different merits. Representative Hilty, this was a last-minute addition. These people were out of town. It's they have some concerns about this issue, and so my energy expertise, I would look to you and Representative Beard more along that line, but I believe these are some constituents from out of town that just want to give their viewpoint for a few minutes about the situation. And so if Representative Hilty or Representative Falk or Beard, as they come in, have questions of your testifier, Representative Anderson, we'll do that. Representative Anderson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for hearing our bill this morning. And the reason it was put on the agenda, we have a busload of my good friends from three counties in Pope, Stearns, and Stevens County that came down this morning, left home at 5 o'clock this morning to get here, and they have some concerns with our renewable energy standard. And I pulled that up, and our state has some aggressive timelines and guidelines for renewable energy, 12% by 2012, 16% or 17% by 2016. But the one thing missing, in my opinion, is that it doesn't say where this energy has to come from. And there are some people out in our area that have some small projects, relatively small projects, that would like to be a part of this effort to make Minnesota more green. And with me this morning is Mike Reese from the area, who wants to talk to us about some of the concerns these small projects have in rural Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Reese. If you could, for the record, if you're with an interest group or what your interest in this issue is, that would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and representatives. My name is Michael Reese. In addition to farming in Pope County, I also work for the University of Minnesota. For the record, I'm not representing the university here today. I do sit before you representing four locally owned wind energy developments in Pope and Stevens counties. And we have several people in the audience here today if you want to stand up and be recognized. I have some prepared comments, but in the interest of your time, I'm going to set those aside for now and just tell you a brief description of the issues and what we are asking for in this bill. And clearly we support Representative Emerson's House File 805. The utility industry is regulated, and the electrical energy market is tightly held by utilities. To describe the market situation, I use the analogy of a grain farmer, where the roads and rails, which are the transmission lines, in our case, that are required to bring the grain or the electricity to market, are being blocked, and the elevators are not buying, which are the utilities. We don't fault the utilities for holding tightly to this market. The regulated nature of the industry has provided utilities with this ability to limit market participation. There are many fine people working within the state's utilities. They do a fine job for the state, and in their shoes, we most likely would do the same. We believe that there's a regulatory process in place now that has created a bias or imbalance and away from small to moderate scale locally owned wind farms. We don't wish to dismantle the system. We are simply requesting some minor provisions to open access points for the market for these small moderate scale wind projects. The bill before you has three basic provisions. Requires the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission and utilities make public the terms of the power purchase agreements. Currently, those agreements are considered trade secret and are not open to the public. We feel that this hinders our ability to compete fairly in the marketplace. We would like to see those values of those contracts made public once they're approved by the PUC. After all, energy is becoming a commodity, and most commodity markets are open and public at this point in time. It's been stated by utilities that small wind, locally owned wind, costs 10 to 30% more than large winds. And we want to see the actual numbers to see if that's the case or not. The second provision requires utilities provide local wind energy options for customers in which they can elect on their monthly bills the ability and opportunity to purchase local wind from wind farms that are not larger than 25 megawatts in capacity and located completely within the state. Utilities then must purchase wind energy for projects that meet this criteria. This is a consumer option. It opens up a market for these local projects and opens up access to the consumers themselves. As a regulated industry, we're not allowed to sell power to companies like 3M or Target or Flint Hills directly. We need to work through the utilities to do that. This will give us a mechanism to at least provide a consumer option. The third provision requires 11 utilities participating in the CapEx 2020 transmission lines between St. Cloud and Fargo purchase 350 megawatts of nameplate wind energy on a prorated basis from wind farms that are completely located in Minnesota, 25 megawatts or less in size, less than 75 miles from the transmission path, and they must do so before December 31st, 2012 at the completion of the line. This is a carve-out for small wind projects. We have a market for about 6,000 megawatts of wind energy in Minnesota based on the 25 by 25 mandate. We're asking for 350 megawatts. This represents 2.14% of the participating utilities' total sales. There might be some question about what will this do for the cost to the ratepayers and the cost to utilities. Our estimation shows that it would have a very modest impact, if at all. We believe it could be cost neutral, but using the worst-case scenario presented by the utilities, Otter Tail Power specifically, where they had stated that CBET projects cost 30% more, this would result in approximately 64 cents added to a $100 monthly electric bill. If you think of the cost of gas right now and the fluctuating price, 64 cents and $100 is not a very significant amount. However, this does translate into quite a significant impact for rural Minnesota. It's $700 million of local investments, at least $2.1 billion in economic impact for rural Minnesota, approximately $1 million in wind production taxes paid to Minnesota counties, townships, and schools, 350 construction jobs, and 18 long-term jobs. This economic development is going to occur. The question before you today is, will it occur in Minnesota or will it occur outside our state's borders? Our ratepayers are paying for our 25 by 25 mandate, and so we feel that we should get the most economic benefit that we can and keep those jobs, keep that investment in our local communities. It's really important for our small towns, our schools, our governments. I think we have a number of people here today that can tell you that we need this economic development, and we look for your support. And with that, I'll stand for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Reese. Members, any thoughts? Representative Hilty.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should I've had a number of conversations with Mr. Reese in the past, and I certainly appreciate his position. It's been an ongoing problem trying to figure out how to make community-based economic development with respect to renewables work in any sensible way. Something we've taken a whack at several times, this is just another whack here. And I'm certainly willing to work with Representative Anderson and Mr. Reese understanding there's probably some problems with this bill as it's presented, but I feel it's important to find some solution along the lines that Mr. Reese describes, because currently a lot of the money that is invested in Minnesota in renewables does go out of state, and I think that to the degree that we can keep that money in Minnesota, we'd be all be a lot better off. So I think this is an idea worth pursuing, and I'd be happy to help with that if Representative Anderson is interested.
Representative Hilty, if I could follow up with that, do you believe it's an issue we should work on this session after we get through all our omnibus and budget, or is this something that potentially could wait till next year, or you think this we should move the discussion forward with some hearings later this year yet? I mean, I'm open to that idea if you think. It sounds like it's not going to be non-controversial. It will be very controversial and very involved, but if it's something that's important, I think we should try and make it a priority.
I think that it would be certainly worth doing if we can find the time in this session, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And I'd imagine Representative Beard and Representative Falk, I know Representative Beard is sick today, but they'll have potentially an interest on that too. Well, Mr. Reese, thank you. Representative Anderson, thanks. We appreciate all the folks coming in today and taking time out of your schedule. I hope somebody's milking the cows or taking care of things back home, or if they were really up, if they left at 5, they must have really milked early if any of them are milking. Thank you, Mr. Reese. Representative Paul Anderson, thank you. Next, we have Representative Sarah Anderson, House File 972. Representative Anderson, are you here? Thank you. Welcome, Representative Anderson. I'll move House File 972 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I just want to walk you through the bill quickly, and then I will have my testifier here give some comments too and share his experience with this issue. What House File 972 does is, in 2008, the legislature directed the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources to recoup some of their costs from their inspection program that they do for aquatic plant management. And so what the department did is they went through the rulemaking process and established a new set of fees. The fees prior to this point were $35 for individuals to manage their aquatic plants in front of their property on Lakeshore. But there was also a group rate that we had in place for $750. So if you were a group of 22 people or more, you were able to access that group rate and have a cost savings in managing the aquatic plants in front of your property on a lakeshore. This was a key element for a lot of lake associations that utilize this program. And as a result of the changes, there's a lot of concern surrounding this. And my Jim Fromm, who's with me today, is one of my constituents, and he can speak to that. I just want to point out a couple of things. So what the DNR wants to do is they want to increase the fee to $90 per individual, and they completely eliminate the group rate. So every homeowner on a lake will be required to pay a $90 fee versus accessing the group rate that you have. And from there, I think I'm going to have Jim, if you want to speak to your concerns with this, and then I will also share some additional concerns I have. But that's the gist of the bill, except for the last section of the bill. I'll talk about that a little bit later. So you want to go ahead?
My name is Jim Prom. I'm the president of the Bass Lake Association in Plymouth. We have about 105 shoreline residents on Bass Lake in the northeast corner of Plymouth, and our association has 100 members. We take completely care of the lake. We put the aerator in. We take care of weed control. we have a concern about this because we pay about $20,000 for the weed control itself every year, and currently the cap on the fee is $750. If this cap is removed, there will be an additional $9,000 or $10,000 fee burden on our members. The reason why this concerns us is because our association is a completely voluntary organization. We We ask all members to voluntarily commit to this weed treatment, and so far we have nearly 100% participation. There are a couple of members who have voiced concerns that they might just want to do it themselves. In discussions with Sarah and Denny, and Representative Mackinac, it was stated that the DNR is trying to recoup some costs, and that the cap doesn't cover the cost for coming out to our lake twice a year. If they remove this cap, the members may decide to treat themselves, and the DNR is going to have to spend more time out at the lake going to each individual home. So I think it's going to increase the burden on the DNR by removing the cap as individuals decide to take matters into their own hands.
The other issue, too, that we have concerns with, because you're increasing the price and folks will not go to the group rate because there's no longer a group rate option, what you're going to see is more non-compliance with the weed treatment altogether. We had heard some horror stories when we were talking to folks of people on Minnetonka, Lake Minnetonka, just going out and doing it on their own in the dead of the night. And obviously, over-treatment of our lakes is not the result that we want to have from a change that we have in place. When the rulemaking was done, Governor Plenty did not approve of the rulemaking change, and that's why we still have it in current law that you pay $35 per individual, but the cap has been limited for the group rate, and so that's our biggest concern today is that we're going to lead to more non-compliance and actually have the reverse effect with this program. So I'll leave it at that. And members, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to hear them.
Representative Guineas.
I'm somewhat familiar with this issue, Mr. Chair, Ms. Anderson, Representative Anderson. One of the problems that we have in DNR is that they provide services and the general fund has been subsidizing those services, and that means everybody in the state is paying for the benefit of folks who live on particular lakes. Going into this legislative session where we're cutting tens of millions of dollars out of the agencies in this grouping, it is hard to say that we should go back to subsidizing a group of people. So it would, I think it's important that we hear from DNR about the costs of their permitting process and what's going on here. Is that the intention of the chair?
Thank you, Representative Wagenius.
If I could respond.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I'm very cognizant of your concerns, having served on the committee the last 2 years. And in looking at this issue, there's a couple of things that you need to take into consideration. One, if you have a situation where homeowners are no longer doing it as part of their lake association, the DNR is actually going to incur more costs because they're going to have to come out more times to do these inspections. Plus, as I mentioned, it may lead to the over-treatment of our lakes, which we obviously don't want, or even just the under-treatment, too. So, I mean, there's a pluses and minuses on either end of it. If you have the association themselves doing it, you're going to have better quality control because it's one entity versus having they had 100 homeowners on a lake doing it each individually. The other issue, too, in the last section of the bill, Section 2, that's on page 2 of the bill, what I put in there is some language that would direct the Department of Natural Resources to maximize the limited resources that they have and focus on entities that aren't doing the treatment, that do need that extra, help in getting them kind of up to snuff, so to speak, in treating these issues. Because as it sits now, the DNR has focused their efforts and their energies on an association like this one that has, you know, crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's. And I think that their time would be better spent on areas that don't have that sort of good management of their lakes.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Wagenius, I think you raise a good point, and you and I think, agree that these permits should be self-sustaining. Mr. Prom, you and I have met on this issue, and how many potential lakeshore folks would be part of this if it was individual permit. I thought it got up to be like about $9,000. Or is it $7,000? How much was the permit? It's 90-some dollars each times what number of folks?
Actually, under the association, the current rule is there's a cap at $750 for the fee. We also pay for the actual weed treatment itself. But by removing the cap, you're imposing another $8,000 just for the fee. And it's at that point where some of the members voiced statements that they would just do it on their own, and in which case the DNR would have to come out to each of their individual places. Several members have already gotten rollers, which also causes more time for the DNR. We're trying to keep everybody together. In, under the association, we use lake management, so the DNR only has to come out twice. And like I said, and we're trying to keep people from treating the lake themselves.
Thank you, Mr. Prom. I want to center on my question. So the fee would be in excess of $8,000 that your small group would pay to the DNR for this fee. That's where I want to concentrate on. The services delivered should be proportionate to the fee you pay. Representative Wagenius, did you have additional follow-up? Representative Hansen.
Not right this minute, but I will.
Representative Wagenius.
No, but let other people talk.
Representative Hansen.
Be on the list again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. I think we all want to make sure to get to the bottom line that we have healthy lakes and that folks are doing what they're supposed to be doing to make sure that the quality of our water is good. And we've got this challenge here of how do we pay for the program. And you mentioned about kind of people in the middle of the night doing misapplication. Would you be open to, you know, looking at that component of penalty and enforcement? How do we try to discourage people from doing the wrong thing? If people are out doing the wrong thing and we don't have the staff to react to that, or if the penalty is not enough to deter that, are you open to looking at that portion of this as part of the mix of how do we make sure that folks who are doing the wrong thing are going to be facing consequences?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. I think it's really important. I think what we've done already is we are giving an incentive for people to do the wrong thing, and I want to at least tackle that problem first. And I would hope that when it comes to enforcement issues, that the DNR is doing everything they can at this point to try and address those issues. But given the bill that we have before us today, I'm at least trying to stop the giving folks the incentive to do the wrong thing. So,
follow up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, giving incentive and having a consequence are two different things, though. That there is free will and people make a choice to whether they want to do the wrong thing or not. Even whether if they disagree with the policy or the rule or the statute, they have a choice on whether to comply. And if an individual makes that choice not to comply, are you open to looking at how do we provide consequences to that for people making that choice not to comply with existing rule or statute?
Representative Anderson, if I can interject. Representative Hansen, I do want to say this is a great discussion to have, and I appreciate your thoughts, because we are going to have bills before us, or a bill for sure, that's going to substantially increase penalties on folks that do things to our water, move plants and critters and stuff around lake to lake wrongly. That's going to be before us, and I'm glad that you have interest in that, because it is going to have significant implications for the citizens of Minnesota and how serious we take some of this stuff. And it is going to be serious issues. Comment, Representative Anderson? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I during these hearings, I have come to respect the multi-talents and capabilities of the DNR, and I assume that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Chair, that they're capable of doing more than one task on a visit to a lake. So I think that we might be overestimating the cost, but I'm open to soaking all these rich lake owners for the privilege they have that I don't have, but I'd like to do it in an appropriate manner. And, you know, maybe these associations we should help promote, because they seem to, on a cooperative, friendly effort, take care of things. And you could always have that incentive for comrades to be vigilant and turn in the transgressors to the appropriate authorities and help police, because I know if you have homeowners associations, they have rules and guidelines and self-policing, and that seems to work out well. So I don't see why we're being overly aggressive in trying to beat down the effectiveness and the organizing of groups that actually, I think, benefit the public in large and the environment.
Thank you, Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to testify, I'm not sure if this was said, but are these, what is the, are the controls going that are happening at your association? Is it all mechanical harvesting? Are you using chemicals?
We use a single service, Lake Management. So at the current time, nobody, we try to not let anyone treat on their own. So we use Lake Management. They come out twice a year and do a chemical treatment of 18 acres of our 174 acres. Most of our lake is littoral. So, and the amount near the dock has been cut in half, and so it's a pretty small area actually, and that's just chemical treatment twice. We also treat for curly leaf pondweed.
Representative Canoe.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And do you know what the chemical they use is?
I believe it's
Aquathol. Mr. Prom.
I'm sorry. I believe it's Aquathol. Okay.
Follow up, Representative Canoe.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was curious because I've heard a lot of concern from people in my district about the chemicals we put in our lake and making sure they're safe, and you know, balancing that. So I was just curious what was being used. Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Canoe, the chemicals that they apply in the lake, that's all approved by the DNR. So, you know, that might be an issue you might want to bring up with the DNR and what kind of chemicals that they allow. But it does bring up the issue, too, as far as the vendors that these different lake associations use. You know, I think it would be helpful if the DNR at some point put together a list of approved vendors that lake associations that could use, and that would help to save time and cost for the DNR, too, if they had a list of approved vendors that they wouldn't worry about as far as inspection goes. So,
thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, a couple of my questions have been addressed. I do want to build a little bit. Looking at the bill here, 1.19 through 1.21, it does appear, Representative Anderson, that this treatment that we're talking about for aquatic plants is not involved with invasive species or at this time anyway. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson or Mr. Prom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell. I believe that Mr. Prom stated that they do part of the curly leaf treatment, but I'll let him respond.
Right.
Mr. Prom.
We treat the curly leaf at the same time as we do the other treatment. The weeds are mixed together.
Follow up, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I would ask, and perhaps you may be doing it, but that there is a some kind of a nutrient management plan for the lake as well, so that you're trying to do some preventative activities. And Mr. Chair, if I may, and back on line 2.9, it says there the commissioner should give priority to waters impaired by aquatic plants, and I would just request, impaired has a meaning in law associated with the Clean Water Act and our water standards, and I don't know this activity would necessarily, I don't know the answer to it, but I'm advising that, I mean, that a lot of times it applies to, you know, some constituent that has a contaminant impact So I may want to revisit that, the use of that word there.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Point well made. Representative Wagenius.
Yeah, just several things. First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, the intention in having folks pay their own costs is not an intention to soak the rich. It is an intention that folks pay the costs that are being incurred on their behalf. No more, just what is being incurred. I was interested, Representative Anderson, in your suggestion that we have DNR approved vendors. And this is probably a question for DNR, but you probably know more about it than I do. Aren't people who come out and treat lakes already licensed?
Representative Wagenius, we have in the state of Minnesota what are called certified pesticide applicators for different. You get certified for different kinds of applications. They can be for right away. They can be for private property. They can be for commercial, non-commercial. They can be for aquatics. All different kinds of things. So we have programs currently intact. I'm not sure exactly how they're coordinated. Some are administered under the Department of Ag. Some, I believe the aquatics may be. Representative Hansen, actually. I'm sorry, Representative Hansen. You could answer these questions much better. Representative Hansen, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this was the point I was trying to connect with earlier. But on the vendors, at least 6 years ago, and again, I haven't been there for 6 years, but the aquatic, commercial aquatic applicators is different than the farmer and the turf and landscape. It has a company requirement where there's a master and a journeyman. So I think there are only, or there were only 10 to 12 companies licensed statewide, at least back when I operated the program. I don't know if that has changed, and one of the things I was going to ask, even though this is crossing jurisdictions of committee, is if we could get a list or just what the number is today, because part of the issue is capacity, and it gets to somewhat of what Representative Purcell was saying, is if you're doing aesthetic treatment versus invasive treatments, there may be a fairly small number of actual commercial applicators. Now, there are the non-commercial applicators that do it as part of their job with DNR or MnDOT who are doing aquatic applications. But as far as the actual vendors that can do it, I think it was 10 to 12 companies, and because of that master journeyman system where you had to work a certain number of hours before you could become a master, and you had to have a master to become a to have a company, there's a window there of maybe capacity issues with this overall.
And Representative Hansen, are the aquatic pesticide applicators, are they under the Department of Ag as the other programs, or are they actually in DNR?
Mr. Chair, they are under the licensing is under the Department of Ag, where you have the testing and the training, but the permit is under the DNR. And so those applications, there may be aquatic applicators that are DNR employees that do rotenone on lakes or that. So when they do the training, that's done together with the Ag Department, the Extension Service, and the DNR.
I think, members, it just shows how this is an involved issue, and there's a lot of training, and as Representative Hansen has alluded to, his previous involvement in that from the agency and mine from the industry. Representative Wagenius, you still have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason I think Representative Anderson may be on to something here that we ought to consider is that if somebody is just licensed to apply pesticides, then they are going to have no incentive whatsoever, talk about incentives, to help the Lake Association do the kind of prevention type thing that I think Representative Purcell was talking about. There's absolutely no desire, or would be no desire financially on their part, to help the Lake Association say, well, what's causing your curly leaf pondweed? How do we reduce the phosphorus levels? And how do we look at this differently? So perhaps, Mr. Chairman, we ought to be talking about that at a time when we're talking about changing policy to have vendors who have both skills, the prevention skill and the cleanup skill?
Well, Representative Wagenius, I believe the vendors do have it in their best interest oftentimes to work with associations or individual land owners or shoreland property owners in this case to do the right thing. And I certainly hope when there's not treatment needed, they're not encouraging treatment where it's not needed, or best management practices would encourage them, and that's current policy today, that we don't use more chemicals than are needed, and I think we've gone a long ways towards doing the right thing there. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this forward. It raises my awareness on this issue, obviously, and to Mr. Prom. I would think that this is an opportunity for the DNR to do some sort of partnering with the associations, you know, and I've discussed this at this committee in the past with regards to establishing more of a partnership. I think for me the bottom line is that the people who are members of the associations, they live on these lakes, they care about the lakes, and anything that we can do to enhance the opportunity for partnership would be a step forward in my opinion. That being said, I'd be interested, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen raised the issue about the penalties and so forth for doing some sort of illegal application. When we do have that discussion in the future, I'd just like to request that we have the information that would address what is currently the penalties that are involved in doing things like that. Maybe Representative Hansen can address that. He just came back. So,
well, I think Representative Fabian, Representative Hansen was talking about the issue in regards to applications and such in aquatics. I think it's also, I was expanding it to the more broad, I think your point and Representative Hansen's point, when we have the discussion about aquatic invasive species and new penalties that are going to be proposed for folks that move those species around potentially from lake to lake, I think it also should include this discussion about folks that potentially give a black eye to the general public, and that's, I think, good discussion. So we will broaden that discussion. Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, you know, as we're talking about having the group, the vendor list, so to speak, if we go to the higher fee increase, it is going to increase the number of people that are going to be doing this on an individual basis, and they don't need to get any licensure or certification or anything. So, you know, food for thought there as well.
Good point, Representative Anderson. And Representative Paul Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Prom, there are grants available, I believe clean water grants, to local units of government for projects. Are they more in the area of shoreland restoration, or would they apply to a lake association, for example, applying to get some funding to help with this big problem of cleaning up our lakes?
Mr. Prom.
There are some grants for some lakes that have public access. Bass Lake is not one of them. we do care about the lake ourselves, and we take care of the lake, and we really are, you know, we eat the fish out of the lake, so we're really very much concerned about, you know, a lot of the residents are concerned about too much chemicals, which is why we want to use a single service. We don't want to have too many chemicals in the lake, so...
Representative Sarah Anderson, author of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, boy, have I got a bill for you, and I think Representative Drazkowski does too. This is an issue that we've worked on for another lake that's within my legislative district. I have quite a few lakes in my legislative district, and it's Schmidt Lake, and they've experienced a lot of problems in accessing those grants. But we keep plugging away, don't we, Representative Drazkowski?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as we're ranging on this issue, I think it comes into a variety of things. But for the individual homeowner, if they are applying a pesticide, there would be a simple solution to provide them with education and training, and that's to make the active ingredient a restricted-use pesticide. And what that would do is then that would bring those homeowners who are treating their lakes individually into the same regulatory framework as the farmers, because currently right now if they're applying a pesticide to their water, if they do that on their own, there's not the training that the farmers have to do as certified private pesticide applicators, because it's a general use product. But if that product was made a restricted use product, then you would have the same playing field among folks who are applying that product, and they would have to know the label, they'd have to go through the certification and training that the Extension Service provides, just like the farmers. And that may be the educational way of and training way of reaching this in addition to enforcement. So I just wanted to put that on the table, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson.
Representative Fabian.
Just to that point, Representative Hansen, you used the term pesticide. Just for clarification, did you mean herbicide in this case and aquatic? Because I'm not exactly sure on the terminologies here. I just want to be clear, please.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, under the statute, pesticide is the broad term of which herbicide or insecticide or fungicide all fall under that. So under the statutes under the Department of Agriculture, an herbicide is a pesticide. So it's the broad term.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Sarah Anderson, final comments on your bill?
You've been very generous in your time today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have before us House File 400, Representative Howes. This is commonly referred to the LCCMR bill. We're going to take a deep breath while some of the citizens get up and walk out. Members, we have, I believe, committee minutes for two previous meetings. Is that correct? Representative Drazkowski, do you want to move the minutes for both of those meetings?
I do move the minutes for both meetings, Mr. Chair.
Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Okay, motion carries. Members, why don't we, as we get organized here, I'd like to entertain and give folks an opportunity to ask about the process here. So maybe I'll first just ask for questions before I get into explaining. Representative Wagenius.
Well, I was back on the last bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We didn't hear from DNR on that bill. Was that intentionally or...?
Representative Wagenius, I actually looked and didn't see him, and I don't know if somebody from Waters is here. Did I? Oh, you are. You know what? Do you want to hear from them right now, or do you want to hear? Do you want to hear from them, Representative Wagenius? I didn't. I actually kept looking, and a couple of the members had him blocked. Why don't we bring the DNR down here? Do you want to address the fee structure? Is that what you're wondering about, Representative Wagenius?
Mr. Chairman, I think if this committee is going to vote on something, we ought to hear from the DNR. If we're not going to vote on it, then we don't need to hear from them. But it's not just for me. I probably have had more opportunity than some members here. But we all should be voting with full knowledge of what's going on.
Representative Wagenius, the bill was before us for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. If it is included, we will have a chance to vote for it or to remove it or to discuss it, and we certainly can have the DNR discuss it then, or if you'd prefer to have them come now, we can have them come now. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't prefer to have them come now, but if... it is included in a bill. I think it is mandatory that DNR talks to us about it.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Members, House File 400 is the LCCMR bill. I believe an amendment has been passed. Has staff passed the amendment out? That amendment makes a number of changes to House File 400. This is a unique situation, members. Representative Howes is no longer on the LCCMR. There's been significant changes in the membership of the LCCMR since last year. The amendment is an amendment that I'm going to offer. It deletes, I believe, about 27 of the projects and then funds a number of emerging issues. There's at least five different testifiers that would like to testify. I believe they probably all have projects that are either deleted or partially funded. I can see two on there that are partially funded. I think it would be fair to them to hear their testimony today. I think we can probably keep their testimony to 5 minutes each today. So, Representative Howes, if you want staff to help you walk through the bill. Maybe I could ask Ms. Thornton what your thoughts are on walking through the bill, or if you wanted to center on the change items, or how you wanted to do it. We could take a fair amount of time to walk through the bill if you'd like. We have a little more time than I had anticipated. Representative Howes, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the welcome. I guess this is up to you or the members. These bills are very easy to read. They're paragraph by paragraph. If you want me to read the highlight of every paragraph, I certainly could do that. But I know you, ladies and gentlemen, are very capable of doing that. And maybe you should move the amendment and adopt it so we could at least highlight out or in what you've changed on the bill so we'd understand the bill better. But I'll do whatever you would like, Mr. Chairman. And I would like staff to do that, Mr. Chairman, because I just knew about this on Sunday. I haven't really had a lot of time.
Thank you, Representative Howes. I think what we'll do, first of all, I'd like to move House File 400 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Howes, I think what I'll do is go through and explain my amendment, which is the A3 amendment, and I'll go through and work off of the bill form, if that works for members. I've got a marked up copy from last night. LCCMR met last night, and I want to thank Ms. Taylor was here, I'd imagine, at least past 11 last night. It was 10:46 when I was at my desk last night and saw Ms. Taylor's amendment. And then I know there was one before I got here this morning that you made additional changes. So I want to make sure, let me say this first. We're going to move through this, folks. But everybody that was in House File 400 that's had their project deleted by this amendment has an opportunity, if they don't get a chance, if they don't get a chance today, they'll get a chance tomorrow or tomorrow night to come before this committee and talk about their project. We're mostly concentrated on about 16% of the money in the bill. I expect this group here at the table to have a lot of discussion about the other 84% of the bill. There's about $50 million in this bill. It was constructed in LCCMR over the last 2 years. And it's before this committee today in this form. Representative Wagenia.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think you are ahead of the rest of us on the process here. So let me see if we can all get up to the same speed. When the LCCMR makes a recommendation to the legislature, there is a vote of the LCCMR. And I would have to ask Ms. Thornton, but I believe 12 of the 17 members have to, and she's going to have to give me the right number, have to vote in order to move a package for recommendation for the legislature. And I know that what is contained in House File 400 was recommended because everybody voted for it. It was a unanimous vote for the package. So now I understand there have been meetings. I am not on the LCCMR anymore, so I need to be brought up to date, but I understand there have been meetings, and I specifically want to know if LCCMR took another vote last night, and what happened in that vote to change the recommendations. Maybe Mr. House, Representative House knows, or
Representative Wagenius, I think I'll let Chair Hackbart, who chaired the meeting last night, say if there was any votes to include projects or delete projects last night. Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, there were no votes taken to delete or include any votes.
Okay. Thank you.
Votes were taken.
Thank you, Representative Hackbart. Representative Wagenius, there were no votes last night to delete any project, as Representative Hackbart has said. I don't believe there were any votes to delete or add any projects the Monday night before that. The Monday before that, LCCMR did vote to delete 22 projects. 2 weeks ago. I think the LCCMR last night, a number of members questioned whether they now agree with their vote to delete those projects. That's why I thought it was fair to come back and start at the beginning with the entire House File 400. Arguably, in the LCCMR minutes, it does say that LCCMR voted to delete 22 projects. Representative Wiginius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the LCCMR process, which I'm very familiar with, things move in and out of a bill or can be changed, particularly the money amount, because as you're coming to the end, you absolutely need to adjust. So previous votes are not the vote of the LCCMR to adopt or not adopt a package. And so it is my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there were some preliminary votes made, but there was not a vote to change the adoption of the package that was adopted very formally, finally, in December. Am I correct about that?
Representative Wiginius, if you want, I can ask Ms. Thornton if 2 weeks ago there was a vote to delete 22 projects, and if it was reflected in the minutes that were adopted the next week, I can ask that question. Is that what you're asking, Representative Wiginius?
No, thank you. Mr. Chairman, that's not what I'm asking, because I understand as you're going through a process, things change because the monies change, and there's always the changing in a preliminary way. The final vote is on the whole package, and that is a process in statute where you have to have a certain number of votes to, and I think it's 12, and that was the 12 votes to recommend a package that move on to the legislature. And that is the question I am asking. Has there been a change in the recommendation that was made in December, where it was unanimous to send House File 400 onto the legislature? Was there a basic change in the recommendation? And that's the question I was trying to get at. And what I hear from Representative Hackbarth, that there were no votes last night, so I can't imagine that there was a vote to recommend a change, a final package to the legislature.
Representative Howells, the author of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've spent a total, I think, of 4 to 6 years on LCCMR, not consecutive, but what the normal process is, and bearing in mind that LCCMR makes recommendations to the House and Senate. But that being said, in order to pass a bill out of LCCMR and be legal, for lack of a better term, you would have to take the bill House File 400 has passed out of LCCMR back in November. And then at some point during the process, if you were to change it in LCCMR, you would need to pass it again as amended, and you would have to have the 12 votes. Now, that doesn't mean that this committee, where House File 400 goes to, cannot amend it. So just to set the record straight, LCCMR would have to repass this as amended with 12 votes, minimum of 12, or this committee can restructure the bill or do whatever you want. You're now in possession of the bill.
Well, Representative Howells, I think you've done a good job of explaining where we're at. I'm not sure, Representative Wiginius, where you're coming from. I've made it very clear we have the A3 amendment before us, and I've offered the A3 amendment. It's written to House File 400 as originally recommended. Representative Howells, you said that word recommended by the previous LCCMR, which included five senators no longer serving in the Senate, with the exception of Representative Anderson, who's on her last few days. It includes two representatives that are still serving again, Representative Dill, who's a member of this committee, and Representative Shemansky, who's not on the Environment Committee, are on there. Eight new legislative members are on that commission today. That group, the new group, including the same citizens who were on there before and are on there now, made a motion to remove 22 of the projects that were in a letter that Senator Engelbrightson and I questioned in a group of 25 whether those projects should be funded or not. They deleted those 22. They did that. They voted to delete those projects and move the discussion forward. I think, honestly, some of the citizens aren't sure they wanted to delete those projects now. They mentioned that last night. I think it would be unfair for us to say, well, the bill really isn't in that shape, Representative Howes. You need to bring forward what those people did 2 weeks ago. Though that's in the minutes that they did that. They did do that. They voted to delete those projects. I think there was some question last night whether they thought that should continue. This is where we're at today. I've got the A3 amendment before us. I was going to walk through and explain the different projects that are deleted, and I believe about five citizens that are interested in five of those 27, actually probably about 31, because I think two of the testifiers were on the original project to be deleted, and we added them back in for partial funding in that. That's where we're at. Is there further comment on the process? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on House File 400, if I...
Yeah, go ahead.
Representative Howes, you mentioned that you had been on the LCCMR for 4 to 6 years, and I'm trying to figure out on the bill here if there's anything unusual that happened in the development of House File 400 through the LCCMR process. Was there... I mean, you've had the experience of being on here. I'm assuming there's a give and take over the whole period, but was there anything unusual that makes House File 400 flawed in terms of either not following the process that was laid out for the citizens or mischief in developing it or something? Is there anything in House File 400 that makes it flawed from your experience sitting on the committee?
Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I would say the only thing that was out of the ordinary and different was the fact that Representative Rukunuvina and I got along, and two or three times Representative Wagenius and I agreed to something. So other than that, I think it went, you know, we debated it heavily many times. Once in a while getting a little hot under the collar, but not so much that you'd write home about. I think it was a normal process. Most of the time that I spent on LCCMR previously was before the citizens, so that was a new experience, working with seven citizens. But
Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to follow up maybe to Ms. Gibson, from the citizens' perspective, is there anything that occurred? You've served on LCCMR for a number of years. Is there anything that occurred in the development of House File 400 that made it flawed or would suggest that there's something, either there's a project that shouldn't be in there because of political maneuvering or there's a conflict of interest or anything? Is there anything in the process that makes House File 400 flawed?
Ms. Gibson, if you could identify for yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nancy Gibson, and I am a co-chair of the LCCMR. I've been involved with the process for 16 years as chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee and then on the actual commission for the last 5 years. We pride ourselves on the process. It attracts some of the top researchers in our state. We've had fabulous outcomes from our process. We've attracted some of our best teachers to do environmental education. That category was wiped out in the process. And we pride ourselves on doing a work plan where we really determine the outcome, the amount of employees that will happen, and the process of which they're going to do their research or they're going to do the progress of their report. Several projects were deleted, and Representative McNamara is correct. We did agree to that deletion that night. During the following week, we heard new presentations, and during those minutes, Representative McNamara said, as far as he was concerned, the presentations heard today are in the LCCMR bill. I'm in the hot seat right now, but I want to be honest. I think the integrity of our process has been challenged. For the new work for the new projects, I want to make sure that they go through the same scrutiny that these other projects have had, and I want to make sure that the message we give to everyone that applies to this process, to let them know that it is thorough and it is fair. Now it's in your hands, as it should be. That's part of the process. I'm asking you, as you meet the next few days and hear these projects, to base them on merit. They're good. A lot of them were taken out of the process. And for the 74% of the people that voted for the Environmental Trust Fund, I hope that you will keep them in mind as well. Thank you.
Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to drill back onto House File 400 here. So, Ms. Thornton, on the history, and I can't see you, on the history of the recommendations, do you have a summary of what's happened over time just in the life of the LCCMR on, or even when it was the LCMR, on recommendations and proposed changes? And you've got you have context into terms of things. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Representative Howes and Ms. Gibson. Is there anything unusual in the process that makes House File 400? I'm not talking about whatever we're going to do today. I want to know what happened in the process. Is there anything in the recommendations that came forward that was unusual or flawed, or there's a problem project, or there was undue influence? Is there anything in there that would say that House File 400 is flawed or unusual that we need to change?
Ms. Thornton. I'm sorry, Representative Howell.
So, due respect, Representative Hansen, you're asking Ms. Thornton to say she did a wonderful job, a lousy job, or make accusations to about the citizens or the elected officials. I would rather she not answer that question.
Point well made, Representative Howell. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and I agree, but back to my first question, could we get a summary from staff on, and this could come later, too, if it's unavailable right now, but just the timeline and what changes have occurred with recommendations over the past? That would be a factual yes or no, or data that we could get.
Ms. Thornton, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Susan Thornton, the director of the LCCMR staff, and Representative Hansen and members. I do have that a spreadsheet to that effect. I'd be happy to provide that tomorrow if that would be acceptable.
Thank you, Ms. Thornton. Representative Hansen, you raise a number of good questions that I was going to get more into the bill. Either Ms. Thornton or Ms. Gibson, can you tell me in the last 2 years how many Republican members of the Environment Policy or Finance Committee served on LCCMR, appointed by former Speaker of the House Margaret Anderson Kelleher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there are 7 citizens.
Ms. Gibson, I asked you how many Republicans served on LCCMR in the last biennium appointed by former Speaker Margaret Anderson Kelleher that served on either Environment, Policy, or Finance Committee. If you don't know the answer, I'll be glad to answer it for you.
Mr. Chair, if I just may add, there are 5 citizens on the LCCMR that were appointed by Governor Pawlenty. And so, but we really try to focus on nonpartisan. That's why the citizens were brought on board by Governor Pawlenty. He wanted citizen experts, and he wanted to take politics out of the process. Those were his exact words. So I feel that we don't ask if we're Democratic or Republican. We ask if we have the best projects for the state. And I would like to add, we talked a lot about voting last night. I tried to move the original House 400 bill and then was encouraged to not do that. However, I want you to know that the citizens, the citizen experts, did not endorse the changes.
Ms. Gibson, I think you make a good point that the seven citizens that are on the board aren't, for the most part, I believe, served nonpartisanly. They're appointed by different governors. My question didn't ask about the citizens. You maybe didn't hear me, even though I repeated it twice. I asked how many Republican members that served either on the House Environment Policy Committee last time that was chaired by Representative Eakin, or the House Finance Committee that was chaired by Representative Wagenius. Ms. Gibson, the answer was none. Representative Hackbart wasn't on LCCMR last biennium. I wasn't on LCCMR last biennium. None of our members in either one of those two committees served, even though Speaker Anderson Kelleher was required to appoint two members. She elected to appoint two members that don't even serve on an environment committee. Unprecedented. So for representatives to now talk about this being a political process today, we need to get serious here. I asked specifically, worked extremely hard to be part of that process throughout it. Throughout it. And I can go and get the letters that I wrote to Speaker Anderson Kelleher to ask to be part of this process. And I don't know how many other people on our committee asked to be part of that process, but we were shunned out. It was a flawed political process, to use Representative Hansen's words. It was historic for the LCCMR to do what they did. And I am trying to be upfront and evaluate these projects with the new legislature here. And I will not be part of people saying that we are the ones making it political. Representative Wagenius, if I'm not on point and not truthful that there was members of our committees that were part of that process, please speak now. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You brought up Speaker Kelleher and appointing members of the Environment Committee. I will tell members here that there were three House members on LCCMR. I was the only one on the Environment Committee. Representative Carlson was a member. He's not a member of the Environment Committee. Representative Rukavina was a member of LCCMR. He was not a member of the Environment Committee. That's one thing I would point out. The second thing I would point out is that the majority of folks on LCCMR last time, and actually in the whole time I've been on it, which is 4 years, the majority were either Republican legislators or appointed by a Republican governor. So if we want to be partisan, and you're bringing up the partisan issue, the majority was either a Republican member of the House or Senate, or a appointee by Governor Pawlenty. That was the case the whole time I've been on LCCMR. So we had a majority Republican LCCMR, to be partisan about it, and a majority Democrat in the House and the Senate. And the majority Democrat House and the Senate passed the bill that was done by a majority LCCMR that was Republican. That's happened several times. The second year, we had some controversy on the House floor. There was only one amendment by a member that passed. And that was by a member of the LCCMR, and that was Representative Rukavina. So if we're going to give the political history, I think that is part of the political history that needs to be on the table.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to correct something that I think I did not address anything with appointments. And I understand the passion you feel on this, and I feel somewhat sympathetic to that, considering some of the experiences I've had with appointments. What I was asking the witnesses was on the process with the RFP, and I take Ms. Gibson at her word that it doesn't say when you do a request for proposals whether the proposer is a Democrat or Republican. And I'm assuming that when the projects come forward, you don't ask the proposers if they're Democrats or Republican. And it's been alluded in the whole discussion with LCCMR that there's things involved. I think, Mr. Chair, you provided some clarity about concerns ready to the appointment. What I was asking about was with the process, the request for proposals, when folks come forward and testify and ask for money, and they all are asking for money, and when there's that give and take with the members of the committee, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, citizens, or legislators, is there anything in that portion? I mean, I don't sit on LCCMR, I haven't ever. So is there anything in that 2 years, the last 2 years, or even the last year in developing this proposal? That's what I was asking about, Mr. Chair. And so I understand what you've said about the appointments, and if I was unclear, I apologize for that, but that's what I was at. I'm trying to get an idea of when the people of Minnesota come forward to respond to a request for proposal, if there was mischief there. And that's what I was asking.
Well, Representative Hansen, I repeated your words. I wrote them down. You used words of flawed political process and thorough and fair. I just repeated your words that you used. If you didn't mean them, that's good that we give an opportunity to clarify that. And if you want to talk about the history of LCCMR, which you asked, when majority have changed in the past, I believe previous Mr. Morris, who's still around the Capitol here, was, if I'm not mistaken, a Democrat chair of Senate. He was a Senate, and I believe when he came involved, there was significant changes to LCCMR. I believe that was before the days of former Commissioner Mark Holson, who became chair of the House Environment Finance Committee, I believe, probably sometime in the 90s, when the majority changed. And I think there was significant change to LCCMR then. As I've been real honest through the process, this is a bill that was developed by the previous folks that were in charge. There's new people that we have to answer to now that serve on this committee and serve in the Minnesota House, and I believe we have to bring a bill for that's reflective of the people that are here today. And for us just to say, well, this was the bill that was done last year, just do it again, Representative McNamara. Be quiet. Don't speak up. Don't question the projects. You should be quiet. You know, you should be a good member and just sit down and be quiet and do this. We worked hard on this process. You know, it's too bad. You should just be quiet, sit down. Don't evaluate these projects. Don't question if $147,000 worth of sprinkling cans and garden hoses is right. Just be quiet. Sit down and it'll be okay. You should just not talk. I'm sorry, the people in 57B didn't send me here to do that. What happened previously is not reflective of the wishes today, and it's my intention to move forward, have discussion, let these people have their way. But folks, don't tell me that I'm getting political now, because I can play this game as good as anybody. And I've been real good at doing it and been real honest about doing it. You need to go back and talk to some of the people that I've talked about and ask how the process was before we got to where we are today. And I'm willing to go with you and be very honest up front right here, right now, if it hasn't been fair and honest. Further discussion, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I asked the witnesses if there was anything flawed and political in these processes, and you're correct. And I'm not going to walk away from that. And I got an answer that there wasn't anything. You're talking about appointments. It appears that you're carrying that appointment issue into this discussion with this bill and these amendments. What I heard from the witnesses is that the process that the citizens and the proposers and the scientists and the groups that brought forward, that there wasn't anything political in that. Is that correct? Ms. Gibson, is that correct?
Representative Hansen, back to your point, Ms. Gibson, Ms. Thornton, you don't serve as the executive director of it or as a citizen appointee politically. Representative Hansen has asked you if there was politics involved in that process. I don't believe it's an appropriate question for you to answer, but I will tell you absolutely there was politics involved. The LCCMR developed a list of priorities that were reflective of previous political philosophies and folks involved on LCCMR. That's not the folks that are there today and in the legislature today. I know that's hard. It was very hard for me a few years ago to sit back and have a philosophy and a belief that didn't prevail. Now I want to have a good, honest discussion about where we're at today. But to ask them if the process was political? Representative Hansen, when we look through these projects, the folks that serve here in the legislature and the citizens are going to get a chance to see if they were political. I think the answer is going to be in these projects. Are they reflective, truthfully, of the legislature, or are they reflective of a few people that had a lot of influence over LCCMR? And are they the projects that we should have been included in the LCCMR project today? That's what I'm trying to move that discussion forward. I don't know where we're going to end up, but it's a discussion that this legislature should have, not one from 2 years ago. Further discussion. Members, I think what we'll do is we'll walk through, and actually we just have 25 minutes, and Representative Howells, would you rather me walk through the A3 amendment? And I could do that and say what the changes are. There are five testifiers here who came, and we would still have time to give them 5 minutes each, but I got to be honest, I don't know if the members have feelings. We could allow these five testifiers. They've either been cut from the bill in the A3 amendment or their funding's been reduced. I don't know if any of them are... we did fund some additional ones. I don't believe they're there. I think what we'll do, Representative Howes, and I know you had other commitments, let's let those five people come forward, 5 minutes each for the rest of the day, and then we will continue the bill tomorrow morning when the A3 will have had enough time. Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I didn't serve on Environment Finance over the previous 2 years and not having really had much exposure to the LCCMR process. Will we get a chance to ask questions about, for those of us that are new and don't really understand this process as well, kind of what went into the original House File 400 to get an understanding of what's was developed? I mean, I just am new to this process, I think, as some other people are too, and I just want to understand how things got developed or how they got put together. And so to bring the changes forth without really understanding what we're starting with, I think gets me a little bit wondering about how things developed. And that may be the case for some of the other members too that have not been exposed to this. And so there's just a lot of questions I have because this is all new to me.
That's a good point, Representative Falk. A number of folks have not been involved in the process. Ms. Thornton, I think tomorrow when we come back, we'll have you walk through the process somewhat of how it was developed. And then, Representative Howells, if you want to come back tomorrow to talk about how you, as a member of the executive committee, were part of the process that developed this bill. And then after that, I could walk through the A3 amendment and how it changes the bill that you introduced, Representative Howells. And then we would have a process point, Representative Falk, of where we're at. And then we could continue with those folks that have been impacted with the changes in the bill as we go forward. Does that work, Representative Falk?
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's appreciated. I mean, just for those of us that really have not seen this before, it's nice to get a full overview.
Okay, thank you. I think we'll go through, so Representative Howes, I know you had other commitments, and to the other testifiers, if you want to make room Ms. Thornton, I think it would be good if you stay there, as these you are familiar with these folks as they come down. First, we have Mr. Arnasty, who's with the was with Audubon in that project. Mr. Arnasty, we're going to give you about 3 minutes, and then if you need to come back or you don't get through what you have to say, we'll have to bring you back another day. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Arnasty. I'm the policy director for Audubon, Minnesota. Audubon, Minnesota is one of the partners that is involved in the Breeding Bird Atlas, which is in line 4.3 of House File 400, which is in front of you. We have a small fact sheet that we're distributing briefly for your summary. There's a recommended appropriation of $330,000 for this, and I have with me Scott Lanyon, who's the volunteer chair of the steering committee for the partners that's running the project. He'll give a brief statement explaining what the Breeding Bird Atlas is to you. Thank you very much.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee, my name is Scott Lanyon. I am as Don mentioned, chair of the steering committee for the Breeding Bird Atlas. I'm also a faculty member at the University of Minnesota, though I'm here as a volunteer in this project and I'm not speaking on behalf of the university. The Breeding Bird Atlas is a six-year project and has received two prior awards from the LCCMR totaling $642,000, which, along with contributions from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Minnesota DNR, the Minnesota Ornithologist Union, and a variety of Minnesota Audubon and a variety of other individuals and organizations, has been funding this first 4 years of the six-year project. This spring and summer is our third year of collecting information. So we're partway through our second LCCMR award. We're now requesting, as was mentioned, $330,000 for the final 2 years of the project, which would allow us to complete the information collection and to make all this available information available online to the community. We have over 700 citizens gathering this information for us all over the state. So far they've logged something in excess of 10,000 hours. We actually suspect it's much higher than that. It takes a little while for them to get all their information input. Our youngest volunteer is a second grader, Kofi Wing from Marshall, Minnesota, who has made presentations on his work to the 4-H, to his school, and at the county fair. We also have undergraduate and graduate students who are collecting data in the more remote parts of the state. Breeding Bird Atlas provides much needed information about the distribution of birds in Minnesota. Minnesota has the dubious distinction of being one of the last states to conduct such a survey, with many states having completed theirs many years ago, more than 20 years ago. In fact, many states, including Iowa and South Dakota, completed their atlases so long ago and found them to be so informative that they're already working on their second atlas. The atlas is an attempt to document the status of bird populations statewide in a relatively small window of time, about 5 years. Other states have found this information useful to inform land use decisions, to identify where developments such as wind farms or run power lines could take place with least impact, and to encourage bird watching tourism. A halt in the funding from the LCCMR would significantly reduce the value of the investment that's already been made and the thousands of hours invested by Minnesota citizens. What sets the Atlas apart from other bird monitoring projects in the past is that we're visiting every township and gathering information on what birds nest there and which species don't. Halting the Atlas at this point would result in partial information that would frankly be very difficult to use and interpret. Furthermore, halting the Atlas midway would waste one of the greatest resources that has been produced so far by the project, an organized and committed group of volunteers throughout the state, a group willing to spend their leisure time gathering information for the good of the state. A funding hiatus would squander this amazing resource. Now, given the enthusiasm of our numerous volunteers, you might imagine that the project would just continue even if funding was halted, but it won't. Organizing large numbers of volunteers to gather information in a repeatable manner, to enter that information online so that others may use it, and more importantly, to convince those volunteers to watch birds where we want them to watch them and when we want them to watch it, takes a lot of effort, and it won't happen without funding. If enthusiasm was enough by itself, then Minnesota would not be one of the last states to do this atlas.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Mr. Arnasty and Mr. Lanyon. Next, we'll hear from Professor Clarence Lehman, and I believe Professor Lehman, do you have also another testifier with you? I believe you do. If you could come down, and then I believe we probably also have, after that, Ms. Schuler, I think, is next after that. Oh, Professor Lehman, you're alone. Sorry. Professor, to your project, are you aware of where it is in the bill?
Yes, I think I am.
Okay, if you could instruct us to your project and identify yourself for the record.
Chairman McNamara, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Clarence Lehman for the University of Minnesota, and I'm project manager on an LCMR project before you today, the one entitled 3J, Prairie Management for Wildlife and Biofuel. I should start by saying natural resources and agriculture, these are often thought to be in tension and conflict, but this need not be so. And in the future world we foresee, this will not be so.
Excuse me, Professor.
Yes.
Members, it's on page 5, line 30. Continue, Professor.
I think that the pure water and abundant wildlife of 19th century Minnesota is not an impossible dream, but can be approached in part through an expanded partnership between environment and agriculture. Grasslands complement croplands. Grasslands absorb the nutrients that croplands discharge. And grasses thrive on soil that where crops cannot. By the way, by my calculation, Minnesota has several thousand square miles of idle croplands and grasslands that can be called into service for better habitat for wildlife, for better purification of our waters, to restore the fertility of our soils, and to help Minnesota contribute to our nation's energy security. This project is about that. This project is especially about wildlife. It's already set up on about 1,000 acres of Minnesota in the northwest, central, and southwest, in production scale fields of 20 acres each, and we're harvesting different patterns and surveying wildlife all summer. It started 3 years ago with a $750,000 grant by the LCCMR, and then we used that to obtain some private funds from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and some federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We brought an additional $800,000 to Minnesota by this. And by the way, you can only get these kind of federal funds when you have some state funds already committed. And we've been successful in leveraging that. Native grasslands now managed for wildlife are normally managed by prescribed burning, which is becoming increasingly difficult and expensive. So with these funds, we're managing grasslands using different strategies, various cut strips, rotating blocks, clear cuts, and then, for comparison, no harvests at all. And we're surveying how these strategies interact with wildlife living there and how much biomass they can produce. We've already surveyed the results of the 2009 harvest, which showed a remarkable thing, that harvesting not only provides biomass and controls woody plants, but also can improve conditions for wildlife by increasing the amount of insects, the mass of insects that grow there that animals need for food. This is statistically significant for 1 year. But we're seeking these funds to survey the 2010 harvest already completed, and then to complete the full rotation of crop harvests to make the results usable by agencies and individuals. I'll stop there, and that's a brief, I guess, 3-minute summary. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Questions? Professor Lehman, your project, just FYI for folks in the A3 amendment that we'll move tomorrow is recommended funding at a level, I believe, of $300,000 a year. Your original request and original approval by LCCMR was for $950,000. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was my question. What would the proposed change of going from $450,000 a year to $300,000 a year do to the research?
We would still be
Professor
able to
Lehman.
Thank you. We would still be able to survey the 2010 harvest. We would look to see what we could cut from the project. Cut out one of the areas, cut out some wildlife we survey, something like that.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And would that influence the other dollars that you've leveraged? What would be the impact on those additional dollars?
Professor Lehman.
Thank you. The reduced funds means we can apply for less federal funds. So the federal funds often need a 2-to-1 match. In other words, we have to offer $2 for every one we get. So often, sometimes a 1-to-1, but it's sometimes negotiable. So it would reduce the amount we can match.
Thank you. Representative Quam. I'm sorry, I thought you had a question.
Chair, you already asked my question.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Professor Lehman. Next we have, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Representative Knut, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think Professor Lehman brings up a good point that I'm just not sure on the other 20-some projects, because a lot of them are research projects, and I'm just curious of what Minnesota might be missing in potential matching funds or already secured matching funds, thinking that, the process wasn't going to change significantly. And, these are not necessarily people who are used to applying for grants, but not necessarily grants in this way. And so I'm just curious if there's been any work done by you, Mr. Chair, since you're proposing this, or by anyone at the LCCMR in terms of matching grants that we might be missing out on as a state.
Representative Knut, that's why we're bringing them all here forward, to hear what the implications are potentially for all the different concerns. Thank you. Next we have, I believe, Kathleen Schuler. If you could come forward. And then, Ms. Schuler, if you could identify the project that you are interested in.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kathleen Schuler, and I work for the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy, which is a nonprofit in Minneapolis. And the project that I'm speaking about is 5K in the bill, HF 400. And the project is a community-based approach to reducing water contaminants.
Excuse me, members, it's on the bottom of page 25. Continue, Ms. Schuler.
This project addresses a widespread problem in Minnesota. There are a number of emerging contaminants that have been identified in Minnesota waters. Pharmaceutical waste is a big one. And actually, I don't know if you heard the NPR piece on Friday. The Pollution Control Agency is doing research with the University of St. Thomas with the Healthy Legacy, or the Clean Water Legacy money. And they have found in 90% of the waters they looked at, many of these pharmaceuticals, including antidepressants and antibiotics and medication taken for hyperactivity. They also found that there are gene changes in the fish. So what we're trying to do with this project is to prevent that pollution from getting into the water in the first place. And it's a partnership between local government and a nonprofit organization. We feel that local government action and citizen actions can help reduce some of these contaminants. So what we're proposing, to work with the City of Duluth and the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, as well as the St. Paul Ramsey County Public Health. And we wanted to address three particular issues of changing practices that could reduce these pollutants. One of them is proper disposal of pharmaceutical waste. And we propose to enlist some healthcare facilities to also work with us to reduce their waste. We want to switch to greener cleaning so we can prevent some of these surfactants that are ending up in the water and causing harm to fish and ultimately to public health. And the third thing is the community use of pesticides. So like the home use of pesticides, people don't need to use them on their lawns. And so we can teach people how to reduce those contaminants. It's a 2-year project. And what we want to do is come up with effective citizen education strategies so that we can teach citizens things that they can do. They shouldn't be flushing their pharmaceuticals and so forth. We'll be measuring the outputs. We would be measuring the outputs that the reduced pesticides, the reduced chemicals that would be going into Minnesota waters. And ultimately, it would benefit Minnesota's environment. So we were originally in the bill recommended. We did not have an opportunity to present our project in the second go-around with the LCCMR. We don't know why we were recommended for being cut, and I'll leave it at that, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Questions for Ms. Schuler. Thank you, Ms. Schuler. Next we have Mr. Steffarud. And I'm sorry, we can't identify which project you are with, so if you could let us know, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Arnie Stefford. I'm a planning analyst in the Parks Program at the Metro Council, and our portion of the bill is not being proposed to be cut. It's found on page 10, lines 10.14. It's a park acquisition grant program. And the premise for this is to help the 10 regional park agencies that I work with to acquire land from willing sellers within approved boundaries of regional parks. And I do have a handout in the interest of time. I'll just be focusing on the bottom line.
Mr. Steffarud, excuse me, I just wanted to let you know, we do have one other project that was also not proposed to be changed in the A3 amendment that I would like to give them a couple minutes.
Sure.
So if you could, in a couple minutes, just tell us a little bit about your bill.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, all the different parts of LCCMR don't necessarily come forward here to explain why they were included. So you've got a handout, and if there's anything you want to let us know about, otherwise it'd be great if you'd stand for questions. You can have 1 minute.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The trust fund dollars would be matched with $1 trust fund money would be matched with $1.20 of non-state money. A portion of that would be bonds issued by the Metro Council, and a portion by the park agency acquiring the property. Essentially, the park agency is providing at least a 25% match. So that, in a nutshell, is my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Knute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is, if Mr. Steffarud is talking about just the Metropolitan Regional Park System acquisition. I was, and I don't know if anyone's going to be testifying, I was just curious about the Metropolitan Conservation Corridors. They're not being removed, but it's reducing the Great River Greening Project and increasing the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge Project. And I was curious, I don't know if that's something Mr. Steffarud would be involved in, but if someone could explain to me those two projects and any particular reason why they might be switched, that would be really helpful.
Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, it was a drafting error on behalf of staff. The original spreadsheet that I think you have in your packets is correct. We simply transposed the numbers, so it's a technical correction.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Steffarud? Representative Paul Anderson. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We had a talk the other day about the Parks and Trails funding. Now, is this in addition to or to supplant that a stream of funding, sir?
Mr. Steffarud.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, no, this is the Parks and Trails Legacy Dollars is a separate account. This is in addition to that.
Thank you. Next we'll hear from, Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Steffarud, how are you providing for the long-term operating and management costs of this particular additional land that you would encumber the state with?
Mr. Steffarud.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the point is that the land acquired by these park agencies, they determine the boundary of the park, and this is to be purchasing land within approved park boundaries. These park agencies primarily finance the cost of operations and maintenance of these parks with local dollars. We did an analysis for the Senate the other day. About 70% of the cost to operate and maintain these parks is financed with property tax dollars locally. Another 20% is with user fees. Another portion is then the remainder, essentially, is with some state appropriations through the general fund and through the natural resources fund.
So follow-up. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Steffarud, you said 70% with property taxes locally. So you're going to raise the property taxes on people around the park or maybe in the particular county or city in order to pay for the operating costs. Is that correct?
Mr. Steffarud.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the premise is that the agency, when they're acquiring this property, has the capability of funding the additional acquisition may not increase the operations costs. the line, the restriction on this appropriation is you can't buy land that has residential structures on it. We are trying to use this to buy high-quality natural resource lands, which typically have a low cost in regards to operations and maintenance. We're trying to preserve the habitat that's there.
Thank you. Mr. Beesbor, are you in the audience? I believe you have a project. You can come down. I'm sorry you can't talk from there. But please come down and introduce yourself. And just let us know, if I'm not mistaken, you're with the Wild Rice Project. It's different members than the sulfate. Did I say that right, Representative Purcell? Sulfate, thank you. Sulfate wild rice issue. It's probably Dr. Beesbor, I'm assuming. Dr. Beesbor, if you could just tell us what your project was and let us know it didn't get cut, and then we'll see if anybody has any questions.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. No, we learned late last night that our project, Genetic Diversity Conservation of Threats to Wildlife, was put into your amendment, and I have no further testimony.
Members, the meeting's adjourned.